Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Second hour at Aaron Donick and Chase here on this rainy Wednesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Tomorrow we'll be at Nissan Stadium getting you ready for the Transperfect Music City Bowl. Tennessee and Purdue. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe with you. Our show is presented by Creation CBD, products curated for life. Robbie Stanley, he can be heard mornings 6 to 10. Robbie and Rex Road right here on these airwaves leading up to our show, and he now joins us. Robbie, how we doing? Did you have a good Christmas?
Boys, I had a wonderful Christmas. How was y'all's?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Did you get a new house?
I am in the process.
So that means you've been nice. You were not naughty.
That is true. Very nice guy, this Robbie Stanley.
I wanted to ask you, I didn't hear you guys touch on this, and I'm sure you did, but did Joe have any interaction? We were kind of talking about John Madden there in the last segment, and I think it's kind of weird that I really haven't talked to anybody that had a lot of interaction in doing what we do over the years. Did Joe say he had any interaction with him at all?
He did not. You know, I don't know for sure whether or not he did, but he did not mention it today if he did. More just kind of the memories of, you know, when he was a child watching the Lions play. Like, you knew it was a big game when it was Pat Summerall and John Madden. So,
sure,
you know, you're talking about a guy that basically for 50 years has been a recognizable name, you know, that spans a bunch of different generations. Like, it's funny to think about. I heard Paul Feinbaum talking about this with you all a little bit earlier. Like, yes, he's a great broadcaster, and yes, like, today's generation is largely going to know him from the video game. He's also a heck of a football coach. Like, I looked up his winning percentage this morning. He had a 759 winning percentage.
Oh, yeah.
The greatest in the history of the game.
Yeah.
For somebody that's coached at least 100 games. Like, I knew he was a great coach. I guess I didn't realize he was that, like, his record was that good.
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised by that at all. He was highly successful coach, which, you know, he goes on the list of guys like Barry Sanders and others that, you know, I'd say Calvin Johnson, that you look at and you realize there was a lot more in the tank and they walked away truly on top. There was no fade whatsoever. They had a lot more left in them and they chose to hang it up and walk away. So I didn't hear the conversation. Chase was trying to explain what you guys were talking about with Ryan Tannehill going up against his former team. So I'm going to let you kind of clarify, and I apologize that I didn't hear the conversation to know exactly where you stood on it. So what were you guys talking about with Ryan Tannehill going up against the Dolphins?
So basically, like, the conversation has been this all week, and there's, I think, this idea out there that, okay, it's Miami, it's Ryan Tannehill. He wants to show it, just shove it to the Dolphins and say, how dare you move on from me and all these different things. And look, I buy that. Like, do I think that there is extra motivation from Ryan Tannehill this week to play really well against the Dolphins? Yes, I do. The conversation was about, all right, well, what does that actually mean at the position he plays, right? So, like, let's take, for instance, Jeffrey Simmons. Jeffrey Simmons, I think, got snubbed for the Pro Bowl. I think he's had a Pro Bowl-type season. I think he's been really, really good. You know, if Jeffrey Simmons is motivated by not making the Pro Bowl, like, with the way he plays the game, the position he plays the game, if you told me that he had a little bit extra juice in his step, maybe you could see that, right? Like, he's just destroying people left and right. Or, I mean, take an offensive lineman, anybody you want to take it. Like, for me, the quarterback, like, you could have extra motivation, and that's fine, and I believe that Tannehill has it. But, like, at the end of the day, when you're preparing for a game or you're about to go out and play against Miami, what does that mean in terms of the actual performance? Like, at the end of the day, Ryan Tannehill's job is to throw the ball accurately, to make the right reads, and to hit the wide-open receiver. Like, because he's all motivated, is that going to make him, like, a better accurate passer on Sunday? Like, I don't really buy into the quarterback motivation thing just like taking his game to a different level in this matchup against Miami. That's really where the conversation is about.
Well, I hope he uses it as motivation, because right now he needs motivation to be better. He hasn't been good enough this year, and this is a really, really important game. And I just simply said last hour that, I don't buy in. That. And by the way, if he doesn't have any extra feelings about this game, then he's not the quarterback for me, because that means he's very robotic and he's flatline, and I don't want that guy. Like, I want him to have a pulse. I mean, he's a human being last time I checked, and they put him out with yesterday's trash in Miami. They paid the Titans for him to go away, and the Titans gave them virtually nothing for his services. That has been an awful, awful trade for the Dolphins. It just has. It has worked out well for them. I mean, it's one of John Robinson's steals as a general manager. And if Ryan Tannehill is treating this game like the Texans game or the Steelers game or just pick another game, then he's not the quarterback for me. I want him to have extra oomph on Sunday.
Well, I'm sure that he does have extra oomph, but I just don't know what that translates to in terms of what you're going to see on the field. Like, honestly, like, I think if you get too worked up for something like this, it works to your detriment as a quarterback. Like, let's take, for instance, guys like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, right? They're both of them are great. And look, Ryan Tannehill's not in the same stratosphere as either one of those guys. I understand that. But part of what makes them really great is nothing ever gets to them. They are very calm. They're very poised at all times. And they play really well. Like, I think quarterbacks, if you hype yourself up too much, that can be a detriment to the way that you play. So, like, I get it. I fully believe that Ryan Tannehill is a guy that is going to be really motivated to play well in this game. He wants to show it to the Dolphins. I look at the way that that you play the game as a quarterback. I don't know what being extra juiced up for this game is going to translate to in terms of the way he actually performs.
How do you see this game playing out? Miami coming in winners of 7 in a row.
Well, the Dolphins, you look at their schedule, they had a nice win against Baltimore, and you know the New Orleans defense is a good defense. So it was nice to see them move the ball. Tua made some big plays in that game. I still don't really know what to think about the Dolphins because their schedule has just been awful. So you've lost 7 games in a row this year. Now they're on a 7-game winning streak. They're the first team in NFL history to do that. I think they figured some things out, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I think they've got a lot of talent on that side of the ball, and I think they're going to present some challenges for the Titans to move the ball against. I just look at that offense that Tua is leading right now. They don't really have a running game. Jalen Waddle has become basically an extension of their running game. They're throwing him the ball a lot. He's been really good this year for the Dolphins, but I just don't think that offense is very dangerous. So I would expect a lower scoring game in this game, and I think the Titans are favored by 3.5 the last time I checked. Like, to me, if you can get some guys back off the COVID list, which seems like it could be a possibility heading into Sunday, and A.J. Brown is healthy again, and he's out there and playing, like, I think the Titans should win this game pretty comfortably. And if they don't, you know, I know it's the NFL, and you'll take a win any way you can get it, but I still don't buy that the Dolphins are all that good. I know they've won 7 games in a row, and regardless of what the schedule looks like, that's impressive in the NFL to be able to do that, but I still – like, I don't watch the Dolphins and come away and think to myself, ooh, that's one of the teams in the AFC you ought to be worried about.
Yeah. What was the list of quarterbacks, Elijah? You reeled this off yesterday to us. Because I've been saying, like, that. I get it. They've won the games, but they've beaten nobody. They're, to this point today, right now, they have not beaten a playoff team, you know, in this winning streak. In the winning streak. The 7-game win streak. Elijah, do you have the – I know I heard a Mike Glennon in there.
Oh, yeah.
It was brutal.
Yeah, the list of quarterbacks they beat is Tyrod Taylor, Lamar Jackson, Joe Flacco, Cam Newton, Mike Glennon, Zach Wilson, and Ian Book.
Joe Flacco and Mike Glennon. The fact that they're still in the league is embarrassing. And the fact that they started and played those games against the Dolphins is even more embarrassing. That's not exactly the who's who.
Isn't Mike Glennon who Vandy beat in the Music City Bowl and Franklin's
yes.
second to last?
Yes.
I just want to know if Elijah's ordered his New Orleans Saints Ian Book jersey yet. That coming in via Amazon? How's that coming?
It's actually in the form of toilet paper. It's not really a jersey. It's a little.
Well, it's a very flat jersey. Kind of like what
16s.
He looked like on the turf on Monday. Very just flat. They were just kind of peeling him off the turf. The
numbers of that offensive line.
He's getting creamed. I mean, I bet the guys who were out of the game, I bet they were going, thank goodness we didn't play with that offensive line. I mean, it was really, really bad. So what are you expecting from the Predators tonight as we kind of bounce all over the place? What are you expecting at with a 12-day layoff coming in, speaking of winners of seven in a row?
Well, that's the question, right? Because I think you look at this team right now, obviously Roman Josi on the COVID list, that's a big deal. So not having 59 in there would be a massive problem for this team because I think he's been, if not the best defenseman, he's certainly been in the top two or three of the best defensemen in the league so far this year. So I guess you're wondering if can you almost pick things up where you left off and play the way you were playing before. Now, the good news if you're a Predators fan is I think the style that that they play and the way they play the game largely comes down to mindset and largely comes down to, you know, putting an effort forward, a certain level of effort to the table every night. Now, you know, as we know in an 82-game season, that can be challenging to do on a nightly basis, but I don't really worry about this group that much from that standpoint. It's more to me about execution. Like, I thought the power play was moving the puck pretty well, looked pretty good. 5-on-5, the timing looked pretty good out there. And I just wonder, with basically having 2 weeks off at this point, not playing any games, how much is the timing affected? Like, if you looked around the league last night, offense didn't seem to be much of a problem. There's an 8-7 final in San Jose between the Sharks and Arizona, 5-4 in Tampa between Montreal and the Lightning. So the goals are going in and last night, if that's any indication. So execution didn't seem to be much of a problem for those teams. That's my biggest question with the Predators is, offensively, what's your timing look like? Is your execution there? And can you finish on some of these plays that you've been getting in the last few games, even with guys out of the lineup?
Talking to Robbie Stanley, one half of Robbie and Rex Road mornings here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. David Poile gave us a little bit of a nugget yesterday that it appears Matt Duchene will be back in there. Do you have, and maybe this is wrong of me to have this concern, but do you have a concern that since he's missed so much time and he'd been playing so well that he might revert a little bit to what we saw the first couple of years here with the time off, or do you think he can pick up where he left off and being the productive player that he's been this year?
I think he can pick up because I like the line that they're probably going to toss him back on. I mean, I'd be pretty surprised if he's not playing with Granlund and Forsberg again. So, look, I just think those three guys have a nice connection. I think the way those three guys are playing, they know the way they have to play to be successful now. And I think there's something to that in terms of they didn't necessarily know how to be successful together when they were together in their early days. I mean, when Peter Laviolette was the coach and when Matt Duchene first got here, those guys had some productive games together really early on, and then that kind of fell off as that season went on. I think all three of those guys have bought into the identity that John Hines wants them to play with. And because of that, I just don't really worry about them all that much anymore because I think they recognize the way they have to play the game to be successful. So, look, like, is Matt Duchene going to come in there tonight and score two goals? I have no idea. Even when he hasn't been scoring, I've really liked the way that Duchene has been playing this year, and it helps that he's been scoring with the regularity that he has been scoring with. But no, I'm not necessarily worried about him coming back and reverting back to the old style of play. I think at this point that this group has bought into the way they need to play. They know how they need to play. It's just a matter of being able to go back out there tonight and kind of rekindle that they had before the break.
How concerned / disappointed should we be that, you know, Glass gets called up because of necessity? He's already been sent back down. Philip Myers has only played in 11 games. Those two guys that were acquired via trade just not living up to the potential that we all thought that they could have. So where are you on that in a disappointment / concern level?
Well, I think there's certainly room for concern. Now, I'll be honest with you. I never had high expectations for Philip Myers. I just, you know, there was this talk in the offseason about him being like a top four defenseman, and I think that's absurd, and I don't think that's ever really going to be the case. So I'm not really all that broken up about the Philip Myers part of this. I mean, the Cody Glass part of it I think has to be concerning at this point. I mean, you're talking about a sixth overall pick that you're waiting to figure it out at the NHL level. He didn't figure it out with Vegas, and so far, quite honestly, he hasn't really looked close here in Nashville to figuring it out. So I think you're always trying to identify a winner or a loser in a trade. You know, Ryan Ellis has barely played so far this year for Philadelphia due to injury. So you could look at it if you're a Predators fan and say, all right, it was worth the trade, just getting that salary off the books and getting him off the contract before his injury concerns start to kick in as his career progresses. But you would also, I think you'd like the return for a player of the caliber of Ryan Ellis to be able to help you and to be able to help you down the road and in the short term as well. And I just don't really know what to make of Cody Glass right now. Obviously, he's got talent. He's gone down to the AHL, and the numbers are fine. I mean, he's produced at a fine level. But as we know, there's a big difference between producing at the AHL level and producing at the NHL level. And for whatever reason, he's just not been able to make that transition yet. So, you know, he's still young. By no means do I think it's time to pull the plug or anything like that. There's still some time to develop him and get him in your system and get him playing the way that you think he needs to play. But I don't know how you could view him right now and not be concerned if you're a Predators fan. Doesn't have to be panic, but I think concern is more than fair at this point.
Obviously, you know this, and Darren knows this. When we bring up Barry Trotz, there's a lot of fondness there. He was here for 16 years. He was the first head coach that this organization had, and so it's a lot of good memories. But Peter Laviolette achieved some historic things with this team. Got them to the Stanley Cup Final, won the President's Trophy, put banners up in Bridgestone Arena for the first time, and tonight they play him for the first time since he was fired here. I know it'll probably be different when he comes to Nashville for the first time, but how do you think people view his time here, and how should he be remembered as the coach of the Predators?
Well, I mean, I would hope they view it pretty well. I mean, he took this franchise to places it's never gone before and hasn't been to since. So, I mean, you're talking about a Stanley Cup final berth, a President's Trophy. You won the division for the first time in franchise history under Peter Laviolette. I mean, there's a lot of things that you accomplished with him that had not been accomplished here before. So, look, I mean, I think it's obvious Peter Laviolette has a shelf life. I mean, that's been pretty defined at this point of he's going to come in, he's going to turn things around pretty quickly. And once you get about 3, 4, 5 years down the road, you're probably going to reach the end of the rope with Peter Laviolette. That's the way it's been so far throughout his career. But I think he's a really good coach. I think you can make an argument he's a Hall of Fame coach. So you watch Peter Laviolette and the way that he's been with the Capitals so far, it's mostly been the same. He's come in, that team was reeling under Todd Reirden, and he's come in and stabilized things to a certain degree. Now we'll see what they can do in the postseason and what that looks like as they move forward here. They're a bit of an older group now than I think you would typically like to see in that role, but I think Peter Laviolette's time with the Predators should largely be remembered as very good, even though obviously it did not end the way that most people wanted it to.
Do you think that he's just viewed differently just because of his demeanor and how he is? You know, Barry was, you know, very outgoing and friendly, and Peter could be all business is the best way to put it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any – like Barry Trotz, the connection that he had – with this city, I mean, it's a completely different set of circumstances, right? I mean, you're talking about an expansion franchise. You're the first coach in the team's history. It was his first job in the NHL, and he was here for such a long time. I mean, you're talking about, you know, a situation there that in all likelihood will probably not happen again with this franchise. So I think it's very different there. Obviously, as you mentioned, Chase, the personalities are very different. I mean, Peter Laviolette, you know, he had his moments where he could be a nice guy away from the rink, and you know, when you don't have cameras in front of him, he was fine to talk to on some occasions. Now, but I don't think there's any question about it. He was a little bit more bristly than Barry Trotz is. That's certainly the case. I think Barry Trotz probably connected with the fan base a little bit more than Peter Laviolette did. But I think it just boils down to, I mean, it was kind of the perfect storm with Barry Trotz, both with the organization kind of growing up with him and just his personality. I'm not sure we'll ever see anything quite like that again here in Nashville.
Robbie, I just want you to know that when I had coffee this morning, I was given some mugs for Christmas, and I reached down, and it said the brand was Robert Stanley. So thank you so much for making those. I don't know when you have time to do that, but that's pretty cool that you're able to make some coffee mugs for me.
Well, you are our second sale ever behind my mother, so I appreciate you doing that. Good stuff.
Robbie, thanks so much. We'll be listening tomorrow morning starting at 6.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate you.
Robbie Stanley, one half of Robbie and Rex Road, 6 to 10 weekdays here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll be back with more. Willie will join later in the show as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tomorrow, tune in for the Transperfect Music City Bowl. We'll be doing our show there from Nissan Stadium. You can hear it on ESPN 102.5 The Game and 94.9, plus 93.3 Classic Hits. Tennessee and Purdue. Kickoff is set for 2 o'clock. Our coverage of that game is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Mercedes-Benz of Music City. Don't forget, if you're still looking for tickets, they're available for the game at musiccitybowl.com.
Not many, from what I have seen on Twitter. Not many available, which is good.
Well, going to be another good crowd for the Music City Bowl. I saw where Josh Heupel has ruled out Cade Mays. I saw Vince last night. We got to hang out for a little while last night over dinner, and he said Cade Mays, he wasn't sure. He didn't feel like Cade Mays was going to be available, and Josh Heupel's made that official.
Do you think Cade Mays comes back?
Well, that's what Vince was telling me last night. Vince said he had a conversation with the offensive lineman, and he individually, this was yesterday after their practice at Vanderbilt, and he said that they were saying that they had all gotten together and said they're coming back, but he didn't get that from Cade Mays. I don't think Cade Mays is going to grade out as high as he thinks in the draft.
Right.
So I think there's a chance. I think there's a chance he comes back.
I mean, I view it that if he comes back, their offense, I mean, they're pretty much bringing a good chunk of the offense back, a majority of the offense, which, seeing how that thing ran under Hendon Hooker, that's got to get you pretty excited as a Vols fan. And then on top of, you know, any of the other pieces that come in from recruiting and in the transfer portal, I'm not saying that, you know, automatically means that they're going to compete with Georgia for the SEC East, but they could be competing for second, you know, and be right there and be more competitive sooner than people may have thought, considering where the program was. And we'll see what they look like defensively. But I think the defense overachieved this year with the pieces that they had.
Yep, I would agree with that. As you mentioned, when we were talking with Robbie Stanley, David Poyle did give us some nuggets yesterday, and one of those nuggets is about Matt Duchesne playing. John Hines has also confirmed that Matt Duchesne will indeed play tonight against the Capitals, and also said UC Saros will get the start in between the pipes. So that coming from head coach John Hines. Also have been seen where Dalvin Cook has been reinstated by the Vikings to be available. Also seeing things out there that, by the way, Hard Knocks is tonight, that there is a chance maybe Carson Wentz plays.
Well, because the big, you know, that was one of the big stories that we talked about yesterday. But then another part of that, that the Ian Rappaport's and Adam Schefter's were reporting that the PA and the league had gotten together and were discussing adopting the 5-day quarantine that the CDC now recommends instead of the 10-day, which changes a lot of things. I mean, a lot of, you know, the Titans obviously have a ton of players that are on the COVID list right now. But if it's and that goes for both vaccinated and unvaccinated players. So if that's the case, which they have adopted it, that is the rule now, he could very well be good to go for Sunday because he falls in that 5-day window.
Well, the NHL has done that too, right?
Correct.
They have gone to 5 days. They have put themselves in accordance with the CDC, so they've gone to 5 days as well.
Correct.
With the negative test. So, yeah. I want to come back to that, but I also want to pass along on the Vikings front. Adam Thielen, who returned and got hurt, he just had ankle surgery. He is done for the season. So, Adam Thielen, done for the year. Ankle surgery. So I want to hit on I want to hit on – sorry, I was reading some Vols. I didn't know if there was anything. It looks like Dane Davis, and Jeremiah Crawford at right tackle against Purdue, so with Cade Mays being ruled out. So just was kind of looking at some of that stuff. There's a lot of news going on right now.
I mean, I'm reading all these activations with COVID.
I know.
Cole Beasley is one because of the new five-day.
We're Wednesday. It's
Robert
like
everybody's. Sala.
Yep, all these coaches are talking. By the way, Mike Vrabel will speak at noon. We're actually going to talk to Kevin Harlan at noon, so we'll hear Mike Vrabel's comments in the third hour. But, yeah, there's a lot of news breaking. But I do want to touch on something you brought up because I was like, huh, I don't know the answer to this, but I would be curious to see what is the reaction from the fan base when you said, how do you think everybody views Peter Laviolette here?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start with you. You asked the question. How would you begin to answer that on how this market views Peter Laviolette as they go up against the Capitals tonight?
I think that, like I said to Robbie, I want to see what it looks like when he comes here. Because, you know, keep in mind, he got fired after the Winter Classic in 2020, and then a month later, everything shut down. John Hines, like, we didn't meet John Hines. Like, there wasn't – you had people that were, you know, against the hiring of John Hines because he wasn't the sexy name that was out there. But it was obviously very weird with the shutdown. And then last year, it was a shortened season, and so the Capitals didn't come here. You didn't have the fanfare of – you know, welcoming the former coach back like they've done in the past. So I think that you're going to see fans acknowledge him, acknowledge his accomplishments, and especially as more time goes on, they're going to look on that time fondly because he did accomplish things that weren't done previously. But I think a lot of it is Barry Trotz, you know, pulled his sleeves up and he did the work and got to know the fans. And Peter just didn't do that because he didn't have to necessarily. I mean, everything was established, and he's not that type of guy. Barry is – the personalities are very, very different. And John Hines is much closer to Barry Trotz than he is Peter Laviolette. John Hines is, you know, going to give you more in a press setting. He's much more approachable. I had a good relationship with Peter Laviolette. You know, it's funny. I was going through all the cheap seat stuff for Ryan's tribute, our first show that we did, our first guest was Peter Laviolette. And so I, you know, that relationship started early with me, obviously working the locker room and being down there. I saw Peter a lot. I interacted with him more than I did Barry Trotz because Barry was on the way out when my career was starting. But they're just very different people. But with that said, I think fans are going to view it more as just an era of the team of, hey, they went to the Stanley Cup final and he was the coach and he deserves credit for that, but he's never going to get the same amount of admiration that Barry Trotz did, probably because of the personalities and the fact that, you know, Barry Trotz was the first and he was here for 16 years, which just doesn't happen. So I just think they're going to be viewed – Barry's always going to get more credit, you know, and more praise than Peter will, even though that may not be fair.
Yeah, but the market had changed, though, too. I mean, the fan base grew. Peter Laviolette gets that luxury. I mean, the fan base had grew exponentially with this market growth, right? Then I mean, Barry was there at the beginning, and it took a long time, as we know. As you've heard us talk about it on these airwaves a lot. Everybody thinks that, oh, it's always looked like this. In Smashville, no, it hasn't. It hasn't. For those who've been here since day one, it hasn't, okay? And it was a struggle. It was a major struggle. And Barry had to, you know, the fan base and this thing grew with, you know, a generation growing up with hockey, which was cool, but also probably frustrating for the Predators on a business, you know, end because it didn't grow as fast as Craig Leopold wanted it to. I would also say that there were times when, as much as I liked Craig, and you've heard me say this before, I don't think there were some great hires. I think there were a lot of people that probably didn't help the situation. I think they've got people in place now and, you know, that just do things differently, and it's more approachable, and it's better for the fans, it's better for the experience, just this group gets it more than, you know, more than, and I get it. They were in a new market. And so maybe that stuff that was working today wouldn't have even worked as good as it was just because it was a new market and it faced its challenges. I mean, we used to talk about it all the time. I mean, how difficult it was in October, November, and December. Like it was the throwaway line. Like, oh, the Preds attendance, it'll pick up once football season's over. Well, it wasn't a throwaway line. It was the truth. That's just what it was. But, you know, we sit here today, and obviously there's people who have been here a couple of years and like, really? You know, they have no idea what we're talking about. Because
right.
They just see a packed house, you know, all the time. I mean, we don't have those discussions anymore. But I know I've been to Tuesday night games against Edmonton when there were about 7,500 people in the arena.
Well, and to your point, I mean, here's kind of the, you know, the ebbs and flows of, you know, having a professional sports team. Peter Laviolette got here, and all they did was win. I mean, they did a lot of winning until the end, and that's why he's not here anymore. Things fell off, and, you know, Robbie said it best. I mean, the shelf life is usually 4 to 5 years with him. I mean, this was the longest the longest time he'd been at one place in his career.
His longest stop of his as a coach was here.
No doubt. And I mean, I think you can kind of make the argument that maybe they held on a little too long because you could start to see it after, you know, during that Dallas series and how that season ended, you could start to see it. I mean, you could start to see that it was wearing and it was going to be, it might be tough to save it. So I think when he got let go in January, just after the Winter Classic, I think we were all like, yeah. You know, it's time.
I think the air went out of the tires, honestly, the follow-up year with the Game 7 loss to Winnipeg. Because
that's
it was
fair.
All set up again.
Yeah.
You know, it was a foregone conclusion. This team was going to get back and right the wrong, right? I mean, and they were. They proved it in the regular season. They were the best team in hockey. And I just think the air, it had a slow leak, and they just never got it back up to proper inflation after the Game 7. The tire, right? Never got back to the correct PSI.
Sure.
After the Winnipeg Game 7 loss. I just think that was the year. That was the window to do it. And I think you could tell after that it was going the wrong direction. And then, like you said, the Dallas series came. They got pushed around. They weren't even close to being the better team in that series. And, you know, as they say, the rest is history. I think it's – to me, the way I look at it, it was just two different approaches. Mm-hmm. Barry helped build the fan base in this market by rolling up his sleeves and getting out there and being amongst the people. Like, everybody basically has a Barry story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you had interaction with Barry Trotz. If you came to Predators events, if you came to games, if you did things, you know, away from hockey games that involved the Predators – and Barry Trotz was in attendance, you probably had – not probably. You had an interaction with Barry Trotz over the years. You just did. You have, like I said, you have a Barry Trotz story. There really wasn't that with Peter Laviolette. I guess some people could tell maybe a few Peter Laviolette stories. But overall, he built it by the run. He built it by the wins. You know, they were a playoff team on his watch. And so he built it by truly just being a coach – and having success. He didn't build anything, I think, with interaction or stories.
No. But he didn't really have to. I mean, that he was, you know, he's all business. Like I've always said that about him. He's here to coach the team. That's what you bring him in for. And when the time had come that it was time to move on, and I think I won't speak for you, but you know, I think we've had these discussions before. I think everybody can agree that when they moved on from Barry Trotz, it was time. When they moved on from Peter Laviolette, it was time. And
I never said it was time with Barry Trotz. I've never said that.
So you don't think it was?
No. You've never heard me say.
Well, that's why I said I'm not speaking for you. I mean,
I never said that.
Interesting.
That it was time. Okay. Most people felt that way. I never said that.
Why didn't you feel that way?
Because things I've said many, many times on these airwaves. Barry Trotz never got the luxury that Peter Laviolette did. Peter Laviolette came in and they went out and got anybody and everybody. right? The new ownership had built the franchise up where it was a successful business model, and they could, you know, David Poyle could do things differently. Barry Trotz never got that luxury.
Okay, that's fair. But I mean, Trotz, I still think
Barry
it was,
Trotz operated most of the time on one of the lowest payrolls in the league.
Right. I think it was good, you know, and obviously it worked out for Barry Trotz. He won a Stanley Cup in Washington, but
I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to recreate things and say he should never. I'm just saying, I never said that because they never dropped everything for Barry Trotz and went out and got whoever he wanted.
He wasn't under this ownership group for very long. That's
right. That's right. It's not right. It's not necessarily his fault or anybody's fault because that was
but
the
lay
of the land.
But they went that. Now I'll push back a little bit. They did go for it in 2006-07, but it was, you know, as we know now. I mean, it was basically said behind the scenes, like, I'm going for it, and if it doesn't work, then that's it. And they did. They acquired Peter Forsberg. They, you know, Paul Kariya signed as a free agent. So I won't say that he had nothing, because that still to this day is, you know, you can make the argument that that team rivaled the one that won the President's Trophy. They just got hurt. That was the problem. Sullivan got hurt. You had Peter Forsberg come in and had a bum foot. I think Kariya was banged up too. I mean, they just had a ton of injuries. Vokoun had the blood clot issues, but that was a pretty damn good team in 2006-07 that I think if they had been healthy could have made a run at it.
I would agree with that. But once again, Peter Forsberg was at the end. It was a nice name. He was a Hall of Famer, and it was a great get. It was great for this market, but he was a guy at the end of his career. He never played again. I mean, so
no,
I mean, going
he
for
he went
it,
back to Colorado, I think.
Did he play?
I think – I don't – not long, but I think he did.
Okay.
I think he went back there.
I mean, he was – I'd have to look that up. But, I mean – That was nice. It was impactful because it was like, whoa.
He played 11 games in 2 seasons after he left here.
As I say, I didn't remember him playing a game.
Yeah, he did.
So basically, he was just around.
Mm-hmm.
Same deal, right? It's like Peter Forsberg. I mean, and I get it. There's impact to just having Peter Forsberg around, but he had no impact in Colorado at the end or here. Let's go to James real quick on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What's up?
Yes, thanks for taking my phone call. I just kind of want to take a little issue about Peter Laviolette. I was not happy with the firing. To me, it made no sense. To you guys are a little closer to the organization, obviously, than I am, but going to a lot of games and watching all of them on TV that I can't go to, the guy did nothing but win. He won you a President's Trophy. He got you as an 8th seed. To the Stanley Cup Finals. To me, the problems that happened under his tutelage there at the end were bad decisions by the general manager. You bring in a guy like Kyle Turris, pay him, $3 million, and what does he do? He gives you nothing. The bad trade for Ryan Hartman, I mean, we had Ryan Hartman for a year and a half. It was terrible. All that stuff, none of that stuff was his fault. And I just feel like they pulled the trigger too soon on the guy. You know, yeah, I know the problem with Laviolette is when you get a reputation, no matter what industry you're in, it's really difficult to break away from that. And I just, for my sake, I don't think that you can put all this at his doorstep. Certainly there was a little decline there. Subban was not playing. He was not in shape his last year here. He did a phenomenal job the first couple years he was here, but he got into the party mode. Was seen out at places like Jeff Ruby's getting drunk before games. I don't blame that on Laviolette. I blame that on the GM. That being said, I'd love to hear a little bit of feedback on you when I hang up. Thank you so much, guys. Enjoy the show, by the way.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, James.
Well, we'll come back and we'll wrap up the second hour with James's call. We'll do that. By the way, Kevin Harlan coming up at high noon. We'll do that next. We'll have a lot to cram into hour number 3 of Darren Donick and Chase coming up here very soon. Kevin Harlan. We'll kick things off. We'll do our new top 10 going into week 17. And we'll also hear what Mike Vrabel had to say today about their matchup against the Dolphins on Sunday. But right now we'll react to James's call before the break to wrap up this hour. And he disagrees on – he didn't think it was time for Peter Laviolette. Look, I think James made some good points.
I did too. It was a good call.
It was a good call. I just will say that I'm just going to disagree and say that I did think it was time. I think for me, I was just, if anybody saw me on Twitter when it happened, I never said a word. I just kept tweeting GIFs, and of course they were all like shock stuffed and surprised, and because I was just stunned that they actually did it during the season. I did not think. I think I could feel that it was coming to an end. I just didn't think it would happen during the season. I figured it would happen after the season was over, and I think that's why I was really, really surprised that it happened when it did. I mean, it was, but for me, I could feel that it was coming. It felt like, I don't know, the thing, it just, ever, the, like the Winter Classic, you know, it just, actually everything just leading up to it, it just, the team, remember we kept talking about bad patches constantly, mm-hmm. right? How much, it just felt like the message just wasn't, I don't know, and, you know, he was doing what he's done over the years, which is why his shelf life is 4 to 5 years. I mean, remember, it's just, you know, secret, I've got a secret, not answering any questions, just made life difficult when it didn't have to. Like, we've talked about this stuff with Mike Vrabel. Like, just say something. Not saying something, it just makes things worse sometimes.
Sure.
And he did that a lot.
So, this is how I'll answer. I think the points he made about Poyle and some of the moves are valid. We've talked about those. Kyle Turris was the Matt Duchene consolation prize, and it didn't work. You know, Ryan Hartman, I think, has turned out to be, you know, decent for Minnesota. I mean, he's 14 goals this year. I mean, he's worked well there. With those kind of players, I mean, Turris was just never going to work with Peter Laviolette's demeanor and system. You could tell that early on. It just, you know, he came on strong and it looked good early, and then the more he was here, it just faded off.
Turris isn't working anywhere. I mean, it's not. No. Yes, he's in Edmonton, but it's not working anywhere. Like he's just a shell of himself, what he was in Ottawa, or at least the first 30 games that he was here.
You know how you asked the question of does the guy love the game and does he love to play the game? I think the answer for Kyle Turris is no. That's my opinion, but I just think it comes across that way that, you know, he got the contract and maybe there was a time that he loved playing the game, but he doesn't have that desire. That's how it came across to me. But to James's call overall, Peter Laviolette is one of those guys that can motivate the hell out of you. Like players have told me some of the things that he says in a pregame speech, and like just hearing it secondhand, like, I'm ready to run through a wall. Like he gets you ready to play. And we've seen the, you know, the clips of 24/7 and, you know, those behind the scenes things with him, the Stanley Cup final stuff and behind the scenes. But a part of how he gets you motivated is he pushes you. I mean, he pushes and pushes and pushes and pushes. And I think after a while on some guys that wears off. I mean, it just wears on him. It's like, you know, okay, I get it. Like, I got it. Yeah, you want the best. Like, I got it. And it becomes such a routine to hear that it doesn't have the same effect that it did in year one or year two, year three. And at the same time, where I'll put some of the blame on both Laviolette and Poyle, is they listened to the players too much in staying together, and they got too comfortable. And I think that was a mistake. So I think it's all-encompassing.
He'll be in the booth. He'll be doing the game on Sunday. Titans, Dolphins. We'll start the third hour with Kevin Harlan. That's next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.